This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This week on Meat and Three, we're getting semantic to understand the deeper meaning behind some of the foods we love. First, we'll look at the big debate happening around the word milk.
Who the hell are you to tell me what is the name of my product and my landscape and everything we've cared about when, you know, you don't have anything invested in except to put out a little money to buy it? It's our entire life.
Then we get the lowdown on the language of cider.
So the first thing that's really confusing about dryness is that it has nothing to do with how something actually feels in your mouth.
And finally, we get our fill of tiki talk.
You don't walk into a tiki bar and be like, oh yeah, this is what Polynesia is probably like. Like, it's supposed to be like fantasy and stuff. That's the hard part. It's so easy to do tiki bad, and that's where it gets a bad name.
Tune into this week's episode of Meat and Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Elena Santigade. Today's show is the last of the season, and listeners, do you know what that means? Host show!
Host show!
Yes, it's officially an end-of-season tradition now that we're doing it a second time. Aaron, Diane, and I are all here in the studio together, ready for another round.
I feel like we just did this.
Ding!
Well, it was December.
It was December.
But our season's so short.
Yes, it feels short.
We have short seasons.
Well, thank goodness that we're back here again doing this because I've really missed you two.
Now this is the only way we get along.
Forced radio conversation?
Yes.
That's not true.
We're actually like knifing each other in the back.
Hardly.
Oh, only me.
We're only
stabbing you.
The real truth is we're all sitting on the same chair in the studio because we love each other so much. Listeners, you'll just have to imagine that.
Right. Okay.
Who's on bottom? You just guess.
On our last host show, we discussed our desert island cheeses, just to jog your memory, what cheeses we would carve into a mountain for posterity and other general musings.
Oh, that was, that was quite controversial.
Yes, Diane was very unhappy with our choices, if I remember correctly. Today, listeners, you can expect more of the same. I have some prompts for the group, and we will just see how it goes.
And we expect Diane to be unhappy.
I've cheered up.
Wow.
I've cheered up.
Wow.
You sound it. So just at the top of your game.
Okay, let's start with a lob here.
It's my deep voice.
Easy lob. Junk food and cheese pairing. What have you got?
The sound of a lob right there.
Yep, there you go.
I looked up junk food cheese. And
what did you find?
I found a dialogue on is cheese junk food, which of course I was horrified, totally horrified that anyone would consider cheese junk food.
Well,
what kind of cheese are we
talking? I mean, are we talking about?
Well, there was a mention of more, you know, less
nacho.
Yeah.
We're not talking cheese.
Goo.
Cheese whiz. I think we can all agree.
But
it's junk food,
it was actually in The Guardian.
Okay.
And then I got into a different topic, too, that I want to bring up later. But it said cheese might be junk food.
Who was saying this? And what was their argument?
They're so liberal at The Guardian.
I know. Well, they're probably vegan. You know, who knows?
Maybe it was advertorial content.
It could have been. It could have been. But I think it was from
like Nut Milk Lobby.
2010.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Outdated.
Yeah.
So it's outdated and doesn't really answer the question, does it?
I know, it doesn't. Okay. It doesn't,
so
but I got distracted. I got distracted.
Where else did your internet search take you?
Well, I then had to just think of my favorite.
Of your answer to the question.
Yes, of my answer to the question. And I'll let Aaron go first.
This is
I forgot. lot to write down my answer.
Can something shocking be predictable at the same time?
Yes. Somehow we achieved both there. That, something happened in space and time just now in the studio.
So I think that I proved at our last host show that I am snobby and highfalutin.
Yes.
That seems to be the characterization.
To our listeners, I think you both already know that about me.
Right.
And so junk food and cheese is like, it's not a pairing that I necessarily do every day, although I will enjoy. So, so I mean, I think the obvious one is Harbison and any kind of potato chip. I'm going to go with Ruffles personally.
Oh.
Now I'm going to say a highbrow. I'm going to say Rusty's and Harbison.
Well, so that's highbrow. I didn't want to do that. That's what I would do. Well, but I didn't want to be that guy.
You know, I have trouble too, because believe it or not, I don't eat a lot of junk food.
Do you use the chip As the conduit.
Yes, although it depends on how, you know, loosey-goosey your Harbison is.
You can't do that with a Lay's. A Lay's, no Ruffles.
I don't think the Cape Cod would really hold up either.
Oh, Cape Cod would. They're thick.
It doesn't matter that you leave some of the chip behind.
No, because then it's seasoning for your next...
Right, double crunch. You might get a double crunch.
Eat the whole Harbison anyway.
The Ruffles gives you structural integrity, and it's so salty. And I grew up with Ruffles in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And potato chips are like...
my dad's guilty pleasure. And they taste... Now that I eat them, like, with all the fancy chips that are out there, they're so salty and, like, chemically salty.
But yeah, like, do they have flavor?
Is salt a flavor? They don't taste like potato. They taste vaguely of like
oil,
like slightly rancidified oil and like MSG and salt.
Could be more as you go along the line.
Yeah, it really, I mean, and actually it varies from bag to bag. I've noticed recently.
Right. It could be old bags.
One, you only really know how rancid, like I just did a chip tasting recently and you have to try and decide whether we like those. What are the fancy ones, semi-fancy you buy in the grocery store? The salt and pepper.
Oh, yes.
With the matte finish bag.
Kettle
chip. Yeah.
So there's those. And then we bought Cape Cod. Mm-hmm. It was like,
classic.
You know, classic Cape Cod. They're both a little bit highbrow chips, but like not really.
But they're available.
They're available. And it was like, I'd remember the salt and pepper being a particularly great flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And they were rancid compared to the Cape Cod. And on their own, I was like, these are good. And then you taste the Mexican Cape Cod, and you're like, oh, no, these are bad.
Right. Huh. Interesting.
Well, I wonder if it was just that bag. I don't want to trash.
Well, on their own, they didn't taste that bad to me. But only when I compared they were like,
There is a purity of taste in the Cape Cod chips, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So I would say, you know, Ruffles and Harbison. I also, Bugles.
Bugles
are just so what we're talking
about. Do you want to do like a little fancy preparation where you stuff the bugle with a little cheese?
Well, so something I do really like is Bugles. If we're talking like Bugles creme fraiche and caviar.
Ooh, there we go. That spans a few.
I love the highbrow lowbrow of that, because potato chips can sometimes be a little too salty for that.
What is the flavor of a bugle?
It's kind of like,
is there a little onion?
Corny.
Is there like a little onion hint in it?
There's like a hair, like, yeah, a little.
Like a hint of corn, hint of onion.
I think they're like a little off, like a little sweet, corny vibe.
It's a unique thing, the bugle.
But not like, yeah. And so those are great with like gorgonzola, cremificato.
Whoa.
Like any kind of liquidy blue cheese, I think really works there.
Yes.
Because it's a great little cup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what? Thomas Keller has got his cone.
Sure.
Then there's the bugle.
And this has been done, right? Like, I'm not reinventing the wheel here, but it's, in a pinch, when Thomas Keller can't make you a waffle cone or whatever.
When he can't make you that
tiny cone of saviar or caviar. Right. And
Just grab a bag of bugles.
Yeah. Bugles.
I think I have a problem.
Answering the question?
Yes, but
any questions?
The problem is that I'm older than you guys.
Different generation of junk food.
I want to say Cheese Whiz.
Well, that's not... I just had Cheese Whiz last week.
What are you putting it on?
Well,
on a
crackers.
Philly cheesesteak.
Crackers.
You're just putting...
You put Cheese Whiz on crackers?
Yes.
On Ritz?
That's fine.
Yes.
You put them on Ritz?
That seems like the most traditional.
Yeah, that's what I would expect.
Would it be Ritz? I don't know. My father used to eat Cheese Whiz.
Well, hold on.
We're not talking about the time.
In the abstract. This is like, when is the last time you've done this?
Yeah, have you done this?
Oh, well, I wouldn't be caught dead buying Cheese Whiz now. Now, do they even sell it? Do they sell it?
Do they sell it? Yeah, Cheese Whiz is a big market.
And I
bet they sell more Cheese Whiz than all Jasper Hill cheeses combined.
Oh.
Sad but true. I ate it last week on a Philly cheesecake. Cheese steak.
Did you get the new one? Did you go to Tony Luke's?
No, I was in Philly.
Where did you go?
She can't remember.
One of the big ones with neon?
I'm a Pats. Ugh. We're a Pats family.
Come on.
I don't go to the Geno's with the big neon.
Come on.
All right. This is for another show.
Go to neither. I'm from Philadelphia. This is...
Well, see, that's the thing.
Oh, you are?
I'm sure... But where do you go? John's? Or do you go to some other obscure one?
I go to it's not that obscure, but I go to Del Sandra's.
The thing is, I'm not from Philly, so I don't know all the ins and outs. But of the obvious choices...
Next time, reach out to your co-host.
Okay. Now I know. Now I know. Okay, so...
Do you have an answer for this question? Diana has abstained
in her
Cheese Whiz.
That's... Oh, right. Doesn't answer
the
question.
Although she doesn't seem to eat that, so whatever. But... I had a similar conundrum as you, Aaron, where I thought I had sort of a hard time thinking about junk food that I like routinely pair with cheese. But I will say that I love having hot chocolate with Alpine style cheese, little bits of it in the hot chocolate that I let. Oh, no. You try this out, Diane.
Are we talking like Swiss Miss?
Like a proper hot chocolate. I mean... Ooh. That's as close as I could get to junk food. But proper hot chocolate, cut up a little bit of, you know, Alpine style cheese of your choice.
For someone who proposed this prompt.
I know, I actually had a hard time answering
that
it myself.
That is sort of weird. Mm.
Then my other answer is queso. But wait, to go back to the hot chocolate thing.
Queso doesn't answer your question either.
Yeah.
Well, that's sort of junk food, queso and tortilla chips.
But maybe I misunderstood. Junk food and cheese to me was like, what do you buy at the bodega and then pair with the fancy cheese?
I know. Mm. I had a hard time. I'm with Diane on this one in that I had trouble answering the question. And it's,
after you proposed
it. Yeah, it's sort of like a double mark on me.
Wow.
For that
I feel
reason.
Like you're a teacher that assigns a test that they don't know the answers to.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Learn from what I say, people, not what I do.
Okay.
The hot chocolate and Alpine style cheese thing, it's no joke.
It's sort of Tibetan inspired, I feel like.
I feel, you know who introduced me to it? It's true. To Tibet and they yak
grate butter and yak cheese into tea there.
Okay. Yeah.
You can have it in
yak cheese.
Over in Jackson
not
Heights.
My favorite.
Have really? We had much?
Not with the yak butter, but with regular butter and the tea. Mm. It's delicious. Mm. I mean, it's supposed to take you through, you know, hard climate.
Well, it's like bulletproof coffee, right?
Isn't right. That's
their whole
same
thing.
Idea.
Yeah.
But it was introduced to me by Sergio Hernandez, and he did that, I believe, in his family life, although I'm not sure. Sergio, you're going to have to correct me if you're listening to this.
He's Colombian. Colombians do that.
I think it's a thing.
Yeah, they mix coffee and cheese and chocolate and cheese. It's very much a thing.
Now, I like coffee and cheese. I used to bring to my coffee shop back in the day cheeses to taste, and we would all have coffee and cheese.
What's your favorite coffee and cheese pairing? Mm. I could tell you mine because I'm a big fan of this.
I think we did all of them.
My favorite.
Every cheese and every coffee?
Of the whole world?
No. We did. We would be tasting cheeses for parties. So we would do all cheeses.
So is there one that sticks out in your mind?
Not blue.
Oh, see, my favorite is Stilton. Stilton and coffee.
Really?
I like Stilton and chocolate.
Yes, that too.
That's although that's, again, a well-tried
trio. But try a beautiful black coffee, Stilton.
Hmm.
Forget it.
I drink my coffee with milk.
I don't drink coffee at all.
Oh, my God.
How can you not?
It's not for me.
It doesn't thrill you?
No, I mean, I like...
Did you used to?
I like coffee. It doesn't like me. Let's leave it.
Oh, okay. I see. Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Been there. Okay.
You had to give it up?
Yes.
Mm. Next question.
Okay.
So, now this one could go... You know, I'm curious for Diane's answer, because you're quite the cook, Diane. And doing all these book reviews... They're oftentimes cookbooks.
Diana's gesticulating wildly with excitement and ecstasy.
What is your favorite springtime recipe that features a cheese?
Well, let's see. I've got some answers written down.
Do you need me to answer first again so that you
No. I would like to make zucchini, spinach, parm, and Gruyere.
That's spring for you?
Well, the zucchini and the spinach.
It just sounds a little rib sticking.
Oh, well, then we have spring mac and cheese.
Oh. Go on.
Peas. Peas.
Oh, with the
peas,
addition of peas is in it just the mac
peas? No, pancetta, peas, fontina, and gouda.
Oh.
What kind of fontina?
I don't know.
No, I mean, I don't like Fontina Valdosta or like Fontina Fontal. Like no.
Oh, Valdosta.
Okay, cool. Okay.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Yeah, something serious. And how about figs with fresh mozzarella?
Figs with fresh mozzarella.
Mm, I don't know if I've done figs with goat cheese, but not figs with mozzarella.
I like figs with feta.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
It is interesting, though, that mozzarella feels very spring to me.
Yeah, but is it?
Like, we,
I mean, when I wrote it...
That's a great question, right?
Like, when spring, I wrote it down, I said, well, does that count? Mozzarella spring?
I will say that as soon as the warm weather hit, like, we started selling three times as much mozzarella.
Mm. Yeah, because it's...
I guess you can eat it fresh. Like, fresh cheese is the spring thing in a way because you kind of move away from wanting really hot food.
And to cook.
And you're kind of like excited to have things that feel lighter.
Yeah, yeah. So figs and mozzarella, you don't have to cook.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense.
Are you
going to
bring them together with an element?
That makes a lot of sense.
Like some olive oil or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, with vinegar and olive oil. Figs and mozzarella.
Yeah. Cool.
Yes.
Balsamic. Everybody likes balsamic.
Yeah, a little balsamic.
I love balsamic.
Me too.
Yeah. Mm. It's great stuff.
You know what? I don't like white balsamic. I think that's bullshit.
I have bought it once or twice in my life, and it seems like...
What does it taste like?
It's phony.
That just tastes like sweet... light vinegar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not good.
That doesn't sound fun.
Yeah, I don't believe in it.
Hmm. All right. What about you, Aaron?
Something I made for an ex-girlfriend a long time ago. Mm-hmm. Something I've made a few times since when I'm feeling particularly chefy.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Trying to impress.
To me, spring means asparagus.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's
we're almost at asparagus. It's almost there.
Yeah,
very close.
It is. It's so close. I'm looking for it every day.
In New York, anyway. I think it must be happening a little bit further south now. Mm-hmm. So I like asparagus. When I cook asparagus, I'm almost always saute it in... a mixture of butter and olive oil. Mm. I like them together because you get the little bit of the brown buttering happening, but it doesn't scorch the butter.
Now, here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you toss the asparagus in olive oil and then put it in the pan with butter? Or you have the butter both in the pan?
I take a chunk of butter and equal glug of olive oil right in the pan, get it bubbling, and then I toss the asparagus right in.
Mm. Got it.
I rotate them around on the pan and then take them out, and I like to put them on a bed of... or top with a dollop of fresh sheep's milk ricotta, which is a very another like ingredient that is spring, right? Like the sheep have like, you know, all the lambs have been born, and then you've got sheep's milk for ricotta and for cheese making.
Totally.
And then, you know, if you really want to gild the lily, you can hit it with like a poached duck egg or, you know, something else. But like hitting it with black pepper is enough. Mm-hmm. Or tarragon would be really nice. Mm. Mint, whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Sounds delicious.
But it's super good. The egg yolk is nice because it adds like a little sauce. Self-saucing.
Mm-hmm. We're coming over.
Yeah.
It's a great dish and it's really not that hard to make.
No.
My answer was oddly similar.
Mm.
It was asparagus, but... with like fiore sardo, which has nothing to do with spring, really.
Mm.
But I like to saute.
About sheep's milk in spring, though.
Sheep's milk in spring definitely feels right. And
but it's aged.
Yeah, it is aged. But the smokiness of it, the subtle smokiness, shaved thinly over.
Why is fiore sardo so subtly smoky?
Well, it is actually the history there is from indirect smoke as the wheels were dried in front of the fireplace.
Do you know this? And you know this?
Aaron's got to know it. He just did a little alley oop.
He was just testing to see if you knew.
I thought our list. No, don't. How dare you?
Diana was trying to cause trouble.
Oh,
no,
sorry.
I thought our listeners would like to know, and
yes,
I wanted it to be organic.
But some Fioro Sardo is smokier than others.
Well, that's because it's a very small batch artisanal cheese, so you're going to get a lot of differentiation.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Pecorino Sardo tends to be smoked.
Hmm.
It can be.
Can
it can also be
it
not
can be
smoked.
Also be not smoked at all. Yeah.
Delicious as well. And that cheese, Pecorino Sardo, overlooked in my opinion. I think it's super tasty.
Sure. Do we need to go to break?
We do.
Yeah.
Okay. Way to spot the time.
Okay.
Oh, I love a good host show. Listeners, we'll be back in a moment with more host hilarity here on the Heritage Radio Network in Bushwick.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
Are you enjoying our podcast? Heritage Radio Network has lots more. I'm Ethan Frisch.
And I'm Jenny Dorsey.
And together we host Why Food, a podcast about innovators, career changers, and entrepreneurs who are changing the face of food.
How did these folks decide to hit the brakes, start over, and become inspiring chefs, entrepreneurs, farmers, and activists they are today?
Browse episodes of Why Food wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm Elena Santigade, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Diane Stemple and Aaron Foster. We're rounding out our season with reflections, anecdotes.
Remembrances.
And questions.
It's all very
odd
Christine.
Questions.
And odd questions. Oh, speaking of odd questions, Diane, sounds like you might have another
topic.
A surprise topic.
Yeah. This is the lightning round, sort of?
Yeah.
What we'll call it. Second half of the show, listeners, lightning round, host show. Who's going to ask what? Nobody knows.
While I was doing my research for Elena's questions, I came across, can cheese be made out of breast milk?
We're talking about human breast milk?
Yes. Okay. Now, first they mentioned Tatia, a well-known cheese that is the shape of a breast.
Right.
But then...
Like that bears just a passing relation to this question.
Yeah, well, it was. Well, she's tracing, it came up first.
This is how Diane's browsing history, you know, the picture here.
I really hope you kept safe search on, Diane.
I hope she didn't, because I'm going over to her house later on to see what
digging
else is.
Digging deep in the cache.
Well, then there was an article by Gail Green in 2010.
The illustrious Gail Green.
About breast milk cheese. And then there was another article from a grad student at NYU.
A study?
It was someone who was doing a lady cheese shop.
A lady cheese shop.
In 2011.
Sorry, can you define the term lady cheese shop?
It had capitals. Lady cheese
it was
shop.
Called lady cheese shop?
Yes.
Oh.
I think it had breast milk. Cheeses.
Okay.
Where was this shop located?
London. I feel like I've read about this.
I think the grad student was from NYU.
Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean the shop.
No, yeah.
I'm going to go with Aaron's answer on this one.
It doesn't taste that good.
Have you tasted it?
No. It gives me the creeps. It gives me the total creeps.
I don't know if you've ever gotten, as a longtime cheesemonger.
Yes.
I will occasionally get a question in this arena.
Definitely.
Yes. Bounced at me.
Yes. Okay.
Sometimes in seriousness, mostly in jest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But
from
often
breastfeeders.
Let's call or just, you know, weirdos.
Breast cheese.
People
curious.
Are trying to get a rise out of the cheesemonger. I mean, right, a lot of times people come, you know,
sensationalist.
Drunk shop. So I think there's a couple of things at issue here. One is that we don't really consume cheese or dairy products in general from omnivore animals.
Mm, okay. Good point.
Typically, right? Okay. Like everything, all the milk that we consume is all from grass or, you know, vegetarian animals.
What do pigs eat?
Pigs are omnivores, like they are omnivorous animals.
Right.
But they generally aren't fed meat.
Okay. Okay, because I saw some pig meat cheese pig cheese.
Yeah, right. that's a lot of people talk about, like, well, can you make cheese from a pig? That's for some reason that's always lumped in with.
Yes,
the,
that's like it's a 1-2 punch. Yeah, these two questions.
I don't know. Yes. I find it insulting.
Yes, as a woman, I'm going to say, what?
And like, you know, I think one of the answers is it's hard to milk a pig.
Right, that's usually my go-to.
And also that they just their diets are a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
And the analogy would be like, bears eat like different. You can eat bear in certain parts of the country, certain parts of the world. Mm-hmm. But in the Pacific Northwest, where they eat a lot of fish, bear tastes super fishy.
Okay.
And so we're really accustomed to the taste of either grain or grass through the milk. But would find, I think, an omnivorous diet like that of a human to be a little bit unpalatable.
Unsettling.
I'm not sure you could make that. I wouldn't necessarily say that you could make that analogy one-to-one.
Right, like, I don't think it's, it's not A to B like that. Right.
It unpalatable. And also then there's the question of, like, is the protein, sugar, and fat ratio suitable for that?
I didn't find any discussion of that in my short perusal.
Did you find photos?
No. But I did find that it was pasteurized, which seemed kind of weird to me.
Well, so I remember from the story,
and it said it was tasteless but weird consistency.
Well, it must have been fresh. I can't imagine someone making like a 10-pound wheel of breast milk cheese and aging it out for 2 years.
You need a lot of tortilla for that.
You got to get the breast milk co-op all together for a hangout.
Well, so what I understand is there was somebody tried to do this. I think it was in London. I think it was about 10 or 12 years ago where they got a bunch of ladies together to like make milk and sell it either as milk or as like dairy products. And then there was a lot of concern about public health issues, hence the pasteurization.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it went anywhere because, like,
maybe the market demand wasn't so high.
Having breastfed my son 29, 30 years ago, I never tasted it.
You never tasted it?
Never.
Not even once?
Never.
You feeding this stuff to your baby and you didn't even...
I did not taste it.
Now, was that because you were creeped out by the idea of tasting it, or did it just not occur to you?
I already like cheese.
Yeah, you were a dairy person.
You were a prime candidate to
be... No, I think I didn't think of it.
Downing it by the bottle full.
Yeah. I mean, I also never had to pump.
You never, like, dipped your finger in to make sure that it's warm.
Yeah, what about the temperature check? Did you do the wrist
the
thing,
check,
I guess?
Right.
Oh, maybe,
I feel like it's just easy to kind of lick it off.
Yeah, no, but I don't know. I'm going to have to ask his father.
I mean,
father.
I've never tried breast milk as a...
Maybe he had some.
As someone with a palate memory at this point.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, I do not.
Part of your...
And unfortunately, my son does not remember.
No, I think that's quite fortunate.
Might be fortunate. Hopefully he's not listening.
Wow.
Me too. I wish I wasn't listening.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Well, you know, listeners, if anybody out there has thoughts on this,
please write in.
It'll be interesting.
Call in.
We're looking for info.
Just send it to Diane. Yeah. We'll
let's just let Diane field those messages.
CheeseDoc18.
Well,
boobmilk.gov.
Okay. Next up, I want to ask each of you some specific questions. I'm going to get more specific about the season here at Cutting the Curd that we're just rounding out.
Okay. I like that our lightning round was just letting Diane ask a word question.
Yeah, I mean, that felt like a lightning round. A lightning
that was
experience
too easy.
Is how it felt. Okay. Unless, should I pause my questions? More lightning round? Aaron, do you want to jump in?
Oh, I'll squeeze in at the end if... Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. I'm going to start with Foster here. Foster's show this season was with Ivy Ronquillo on the eve of her opening her new cheese shop.
Yes, 48 hours from today, from now.
48 hours. I checked her Instagram this morning just to see had they opened yet.
Or I guess it'll be Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning. Oh, cool. My goodness. Second Mouse Cheese.
Although I did just see today she got her some of her equipment in. And posted on our little message board. Does anyone know what this plug is? Because it doesn't go in my wall. So, you know.
So maybe those 72 dates are hours. Fluid.
Yes.
One thing that I was wondering, listening to that great episode, was how it was making you feel, Foster, after having gone through your own opening, talking to her as she, I think you put it, that she was looking over the precipice of this big leap.
I think I said precipice into the miasma.
Into the miasma. How could I forget that? Yes, you did.
Which I then had to look up later to make sure. And I feel comfortable in my usage.
I think that your usage fit within the definition of miasma.
A sort of poisonous fog.
And that quote gave me a hint as to your feelings.
But yeah, it wasn't a sort of independent... Yeah. Non-committal.
How old is your shop?
My shop is into its fourth year.
Oh, wow.
And so what... Okay, here were some of the things I was
like
wondering.
Owen Wilson. That's great.
Diane.
Wow.
Were you feeling...
You do a good Owen Wilson.
Did you feel... sentimental? Did you think back on those early days?
No, I felt
days?
Very... I felt... sort of
protective,
yeah, sort of paternal, protective,
like seeing her go into this thing,
she seems extremely confident and very.
She was very energetic on the show,
knowledgeable and very ready.
And you wanted to tell her you don't know what you're getting
sort
into,
sort of, but I think maybe there was some jealousy in there on my part as well, which is like maybe she does and I didn't, but I felt really prepared. Until I wasn't.
You weren't.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I was like, you know, do you know what your numbers are? Do you know where you want to
be? Yeah, she had answers.
She did. And I was ready to be like, I'm happy. I offer anyone who comes to me and says, like, I'm opening a cheese shop. I say don't. And then I say, but if you're going to, you know, I'm happy to give you anything that I know, any of my knowledge, I'm happy to share.
Right.
I felt like anxiously optimistic, I think, for her.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
I also know that it's really hard and it strains a marriage and strains a life and she's got kids and it's a lot of work, man.
Yeah.
But I also have so much respect for people that follow their dreams to that extent and know what their dreams are and can manifest them in such an amazing way. So
like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like myself.
He's said making a funny face.
Hesitancy.
It's so funny because you're like, you're living your dream. And it's like,
you're like,
I thought
it might feel different.
Right. This is a weird dream.
It's
Why
a nightmare.
Can I not move? And I'm
sick to my stomach.
I can't hear my own screams.
Very good.
So I wish her the best. I'm very excited for her. Mm-hmm. I can't wait to check back in. Yeah.
Maybe
yeah,
it'll be easier be up there.
Right.
Any possibility?
So what I think
she is closed,
I think she'll
one
do well.
Day a week.
I'm optimistic for her. I think ultimately, like, any location, any new business like this that actually requires like people to come in your door and bring you business. It's not like you're writing a computer program and then selling it. Like you need someone every day. You need a lot of people to come into your door and come to you specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And that means like changing behaviors. And so that I think adds like a great level of anxiety to the whole thing and is always complicated because you're dealing with humans.
Right. Good point. Very, very good point.
It'd be easier if you were selling cheese to dogs.
Or if it was just widgets.
Widgets would be so simple.
It'd be harder because dogs don't use money.
Ah, right.
One trick.
Do widgets?
Use money?
Yeah.
They can.
I just didn't expect that question.
Okay.
You got me, Diane. Advantage simple.
I just thought maybe I didn't know widgets.
Gold.
You're thinking of Gidget, I think.
There you go.
It's more from your
era.
That's
another
generational difference. All right, Diane, you're next.
Oh, shit.
This season, you hosted 3 book review episodes. You reviewed Janet Fletcher's Wine Country Table, Steve Jones's Cheese Beer Wine Cider, and Mike Edison's memoir, You Are a Complete Disappointment. Of the 3, which book did you learn the most from?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think Beer, Cheese, and Wine, because I wanted to learn about all those things.
Right. Wait, was that even a choice?
Yeah, that was the second.
I did learn
Steve Jones.
A lot more than I thought I would from Janet Fletcher's book because it had a lot of information about vegetables and wine and all sorts of California stuff.
She's very good at writing about things that seem like they'd be really related to each other over and over and over again and making them all seem kind of different.
Yeah.
There's a freshness in her books where you're like, wow, this is a new book.
Yeah. I like it.
But, well, and also it was gigantic and had amazing pictures. But the Beer, Cheese, and Wine book was a dive into cider, which I'd never thought about.
That's also in the title.
Beer, right, cheese, you're saying Beer, cider. Cheese, and Wine. I'm like,
yeah.
Do you
I
like
think it's, I think the title's
cider,
all 4.
Was yeah, the yeah. cider the
big, Oh, beer.
Was, beer, cheese, wine, cider.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Whatever.
So were you most compelled? Like, I feel like you're passionate about beer.
Yes.
Is cider like an area that you wanted to specifically learn about?
Right, like is that going to kick off a passion?
Yeah.
I don't think so because it's not enough like beer.
Diane is deep in a beer phase.
Yeah.
I'm trying to branch out to pilsners.
Right. From
IPAs.
She has been deep in not only a beer phase but only IPA.
I can't go to sour. I just can't.
You can't do it.
I'm not
interested.
It's
hard on the esophagus, you know?
Yeah, it's tricky.
I find that the...
is it bad?
Stomach acid.
Yeah.
I mean, I love sour beer, but it's hard to drink.
Yeah. I don't like the taste of it.
Mm. So, what about dark beers?
Not as interested. So I'm going up to pilsners, you know, instead of down.
Yeah, to the depths.
To weirdnesses.
Sure, that makes sense.
But... Anyway, so I just loved the book, and they have excellent information.
Oh, right, and their descriptions
in
their descriptions,
and their descriptions
really wowed you.
Are wild.
Yeah.
What about double IPAs?
I'll try them.
Okay.
I mean, I try not to drink too heavily.
Sure.
You right, know, you can have like
2 IPAs, but could only have 1. Double IPA.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I like the places with the small glasses.
Right. I love a 6-ounce pour.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that like it's a half pour.
Yeah, because I like 4 of them instead
more
of
things
a
to drink.
Big
well,
beer.
Well, also, my thing is I like it to be cold. I like having it cold. If I'm sitting with a whole pint, I'm either going to down it way faster than I want to.
Right.
Or the second half is going to taste weird.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I like cold too.
Yeah.
That is why
actually
small
I have
glasses
a,
are good.
You know, here's a tip.
Yeah.
I do this sometimes at coffee shops for the same reason, but wanting the coffee to be hot.
Mm-hmm.
Do a little thing called a now and later. Let me pay for the full pint. Pour me half now and half later.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Whoa. Do they do that? Do they find you to be a pest?
Usually. Places will do it.
We get very few people that do that.
You know, you could add it to your menu and call it the Elena's Now and Later.
I'm not going
to
do that, though.
It'll be too difficult.
It's a pain in the ass, but I'm happy to oblige.
But verbal requests you will honor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the Now and Later is a fun way to have beverages.
Oh, I love that.
Yep.
I love that.
It's also a really...
I wonder if you can do it with
that
beer.
Removes your fillings.
What is that candy? Is it like a taffy?
Yeah, it's sort of like a fruity taffy.
Okay, doing a big callback here. What cheese would you pair taffy with?
Mm.
This is tricky.
But not like a butterscotch taffy, like a fruit taffy?
No. Fruit taffy, a Now and Later, let's say. If you aren't familiar with Now and Later, Diane.
I'm not.
Fruit taffy wants a blue cheese.
Saltwater taffy, fruit. Yeah, fruit taffy and blue. I could see
that. Oh, I do not like fruit taffy. I hate it. I never want to eat it.
The look on Diane's face right now in the studio.
Sorry, did someone say blue fruit taffy? Get out!
You're off the show.
Well, so why don't you tell us what your favorite memory was from this season? You did a bunch of shows.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, what
Thank
sticks
you,
in your mind?
Aaron.
Was,
wow.
You know, probably
what did you learn? How did you learn? What did you learn?
Yeah. Was there something about cheese that you didn't really know?
I'll answer with two episodes.
Great. Okay.
My episode with Inga Witcher, mm-hmm. who hosts Around the Farm Table in Wisconsin and has a small dairy farm of her own, I found to be really, really fun and inspiring. Mm-hmm. She actually, her barn had just burned down in the fall, in the end of the fall season. And when I had her on air, they're rebuilding. Mm-hmm. But we had a blast, and that show was a lot of fun because we both had finished reading Michelle Obama's book. And we kept finding ways to talk about it, which felt really fun. I never expected to talk about that book on Cutting the Curd. So, because sadly, there's not a single mention of cheese. Because Diane, you know that I would ask Michelle Obama to come on.
Did you know that Bailey Hazen, I believe it was Bailey Hazen.
It was in the White House.
Yes, I think twice.
So unfortunately that didn't make it into the book, I guess. But mm-hmm. so that was a really interesting episode. And I thought, I wasn't sure, you know, like from seeing Around the Farm Table, I wasn't sure how Inga, you know, like if we'd hit it off, and I just felt like she could be, I wanted her to be my best friend.
Was it in person?
No, it was over the phone.
Oh, wow.
And then I had a lot of fun recently interviewing Rachel from Goodzur, the sour beer bar in Denver. Where we went before ACS. Mm-hmm. Diane, you were there.
It's a lovely bar.
And what I liked about that episode was how inspiring. It's sort of similar to
Diane was like, do you guys have any IPAs? So I don't like sour beer.
She was like, what? What? Diane was disappointed by that.
I don't even remember it.
It was...
too many IPAs.
Too many IPAs.
They probably had them.
You probably brought your own, knowing you.
It's also a legal weed state. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Diane had other methods at her disposal.
I forgot that.
Similar to Foster's show with Ivy.
Is that where we walked?
No.
No, that was
a different memory.
That was on our vacation.
Yeah, that was a separate, that was a pre-ACS trip.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
That was fun.
Where was that? What town were we in?
Breckenridge?
Yes, we made a scene in Breckenridge. I'll just leave it there.
Me and Amy and Elena.
It's true.
But girls trip.
The Goodzur folks are doing, they have all the energy in the world, and that really inspired me, sort of like the Ivy show. Like, they're filled with that new enthusiasm for their business, for the products. They're just making everything happen. They like totally infected me with a like renewed sense of wonder about like the possibilities, which felt really fun.
Yeah, I think it's always really gratifying to encounter those people, mm-hmm. especially when you've been doing something for so long.
And yes.
You might have lost a little bit of steam.
And when you hear a lot, I mean, I feel like we hear a lot about the problems people are facing, the challenges, the things that make life in cheese hard. And we hear a lot about why people love it and what keeps the passion alive too. But when you're seeing someone not only feel the passion, but pulling it off and getting shit done in a huge way, that just like, I'm floored by it. Mm-hmm. So that episode was really fun. And I mean, they were in the midst of a road trip from Vermont back to Denver with a cheese that had been washed in a sour beer that they had designed.
Hand ferrying back to Denver.
Seriously. And then, and also dropping off and selling it to restaurants on the way.
Oh, cool.
So that was just like so cool.
That sounds so against the health code regulations.
Yeah, well, you know, let's just assume the cold chain, you know, was preserved.
It was in their trunk, probably.
Yeah, cool trunk. Mm-hmm. So that's my answer.
Okay.
Wow. Okay, I think that's it. Wow.
No, that's not it.
Oh, it's not it? Oh, okay.
The last part, the best part.
Oh, is?
Is what would you name your new baby goat?
Oh, I have
we
some
save the best
names.
For last. Great, excellent.
I have
well,
some
because,
names.
You know, it's kidding season. And, you know, it's, if you follow any goat cheese makers on Instagram, you see these little hopping.
There's tons of baby goats out there right now.
Silly goats doing silly things.
It's a fun, this is a fun brainstorm here. You have some names that you prepared.
I do. I prepared some names.
Boys and girls?
I don't know.
will you share some with us?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Yes. One is Budinski.
Budinski.
Okay. Budinski.
Like,
yeah.
Like a but. Don't stop being such a Butinsky.
Yes. Buttinsky.
Is this because goats are always up in your business?
Well, it's because I think I've called people Budinskys my whole life.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay. What does that have to do with goats, though?
Because they're cute.
Because they butt.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. No, that's great. Perfect. Love it.
She got it. She got it.
Great. Good.
We figured
okay.
that out.
Okay. And can I say my next one?
Yes.
Scapegoat.
Okay.
Would you I like call? It. Would you call a scapegoat scapey?
Maybe.
Yeah.
I might call him scape.
Scape.
Okay.
Yeah, scapegoat is good.
Do you those have any are, other, do you have others?
No. Okay.
Those
none,
are good?
None.
What oh, about you?
No, you go first.
I want to go last. You okay. want me to go first?
You go first.
Well, I don't have an answer.
Seriously?
She didn't do her homework.
Wow.
I have to point out.
I figured
Elena
I
did not change do her
up.
Homework.
I've got wow. to change up the dynamics here.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so
Diane
you...
was so well prepared.
Well,
I just
okay,
didn't
well,
do
I'll
it.
Do mine, and then you have come, the come next 30 seconds answer. To come up with one.
All right. Okay. I'm thinking.
I like that you could have just been like, stay on, it's your turn. Because we're on the radio, no one can see you being like, I don't have one. I can, Boutrous, Goaty.
Love it. Mm-hmm.
Diane's okay. looking at me like,
Diane,
I don't
you get it.
It.
Boutrous,
oh,
Goaty.
Okay.
She doesn't like it.
Nope.
I think if we were to let the internet decide, they would come up with Goaty McGoatface.
Okay.
Right?
Yep, definitely.
Instagram I don't know if you guys poll. Are Baywatch fans. Yes. Yasmin Bleat. No? Yes.
That's a good one.
These are good.
That is a good one.
If you're
one.
Interested in history of mathematics and non-Euclidean geometry, we could go with Nikolai Ivanovich Lobachevsky.
Okay. Oh, wow. This is ending on a real high note here.
That's yeah. too long.
Well, we
Foster, you really...
Nick.
Oh, just okay.
Nick.
Okay.
And then, of course, for our hip-hop fans, it's a goat's face killer.
Oh, wow. Wow. No, I vote... That's my favorite.
Okay.
All right. I can't top that. I'm just going to leave it there.
I think Yasmin Bleat is my favorite.
Wow. Another host show under the belt.
Ah.
In the books.
In the books.
On the record.
Record.
On heritageradionetwork.org. It's Diane Stemple, Aaron Foster, and Elena Sanigade with our lovely producer.
Engineer
Matt.
Yes.
Hello. I see him bopping his head up and down.
And he's telling us to give us the hook and show
up. Oh, yeah.
Just come on.
Yeah.
Let's
give
do
us
it.
A pizza.
Let's look.
Well, okay. Thanks for listening this season, folks.
Yes. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back in a few weeks with new episodes of Cutting the Curd.
Is that soon?
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, and connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork.
Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.